Welcome to the This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Thanks for joining us. We've got about a week of games to chat about and some great storylines from Rays camp as well. So let's begin the podcast with Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times. And Mark, let's start with the games themselves. What do you think we did learn from Rays games this week?
Well, I think one thing, Neil, that I wouldn't even say learn, but certainly reinforce, is the starting pitching is really good. And when healthy, you know, that's really not been a question. We've just talked about it time and time again, how it's one of the best rotations in the American League, maybe all of baseball. So I think we've seen that and how strong those guys have looked. And some guys, you know, Rizzi's now pitched twice. Matt Moore made his debut against the Red Sox on Monday. And you know, things have actually looked pretty good for just about all the starters. Defense has been shaky, a little bit of a surprise because, you know, they've really stressed and emphasized the defense. And, you know, Kevin Cash, is, I thought, handled it well. He actually, you know, he didn't just brush it off. He said, you know, these are mistakes that are costing us games. And maybe in a way, there's a good way to look at it, and that it reinforces to the players making the routine plays is important, because there have been two games where I think the decisive run have scored an error on a routine play that the Rays botched. So that to me are probably the two things that stand out.
And you look at the game they played, let's say Monday against Boston, the infield did play a clean game. They did play their first error-free game of the spring, and maybe if this continues for another week or two in terms of a lot of errors piling up, it becomes an even greater concern for Kevin, although he said, hey, this wrapping the regular season, not exhibition season, would mean a whole lot more. But if they start playing clean baseball for the next week or two, I think maybe it doesn't put it to rest, but you probably have a better feeling about the defense.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to say best case scenario, make a bunch of errors early, learn from them, don't make any more. Another point to make is that, and we all get wrapped up in this when you're around it on a daily basis, but you have to sometimes remember who's on the field when these mistakes are happening. You know, sometimes the cumulative stats aren't reflective because so many guys are playing in these games that aren't going to be part of the team, that aren't key guys. Now, in the game on Monday at Boston, it was pretty much the starting infield. I mean, Longoria, Miller, Forsyth, Morrison at first. Against a right-handed starter, there's a real good chance that could be the starting lineup, obviously, pending what happens with James Loney. So, you know, that could also be a reason you saw an error-free game that was kind of the A-team in there.
And you mentioned the A-team starting pitching has been very good. And when we haven't seen what we would call the A-team offense, but there have been some displays of offense, a couple of 10-run games with in the first week.
And I think what you look at this point is the approach. And you know, the Rays made such a big deal toward the end of last season of switching to that more of an aggressive approach. You know, Derek Shelton, I know, has been advocating that, to stick with that this season. Kevin Cash does. They want to go with that again. You know, and part of it now is integrating the new players into that approach. I mean, you know, Evan Longoria bought in last year, but he had a cautionary comment at the start of camp this year where he said, you know, other teams are watching that. We can't just go up there swinging at anything. We have to be careful how we're getting pitched now and recognize that. So there's going to be some adjustments to make, but, you know, the fact that they added to the offense is obvious. You know, you and I have been talking for a piece I did on the lineups and how that's going to fit together. There's different theories of how this is going to fit, but there's no debating how many more options and how many more pieces they have to work with.
And speaking of fitting together, you did a great piece Sunday in the Tampa Bay Times on chemistry and how that all figures in and how guys work together and how that figures in what the front office does.
Yeah, it was interesting. And I think anytime you can kind of get a peek behind the curtain, so to speak, and share that with the readers and the listeners is always cool to do. And, you know, we all think of the Rays as this kind of stat heavy, you know, quote unquote, nerd driven, you know, analytical organization. And they very much do all those things. They've got a whole slew of number crunchers. There's guys who work for the Rays that we've never seen. They don't even work in the property. They live elsewhere off property. But, you know, to also mix in with that, the human element, and Kevin Cash has made some great points that, you know, because they can't afford to make mistakes, they have to bet on the right people. And part of that is getting a real feel for those guys, how they fit in the clubhouse, how they get along. I mean, they don't have to all love each other, but they have to have that chemistry and that camaraderie and that, you know, spirit decor of wanting to do what's best for the team.
Something that obviously you can do during the course of spring training at times. One thing we will have here in spring training, finally official this week, is the trip to Cuba.
Yes, hola. I mean, it's going to be fun to go and obviously, you know, to cover this trip, a historic event, and not just from a baseball standpoint, but really from a political standpoint. I mean, the president's going to be there. There's going to be a bunch of other U.S. senators there, from what I've heard, the mayor of St. Petersburg. There's going to be so many elements to this trip, but the fact that, you know, it's basically baseball diplomacy, and that's really kind of a cool thing, and that we're going to be able to be there and witness it and just to see what that's like is going to just be a fascinating experience.
And maybe someone from Cuba playing for the Rays in De'Ron Verona.
Yeah, and you know, talking to De'Ron last week, and you know, really learning his story. I mean, he's a guy who signed with the Rays last year. He was a free agent, not a big name guy. Got less than $500,000, but he was playing for $4 a month in Cuba. He was talked a little bit about how he got out. He took a boat, went to Haiti with his mom, and then ended up getting citizenship to be able to come and get signed over here in pro ball. And just to get a sense from him of what it would be like, and you know, if he got to go back, and he has to be one of the 28 players the Rays pick, there will be a limit. But you'd certainly think if he's healthy, they'd bring him back. And what an emotional story that would be for him. And he didn't know when he left if he'd ever get to go back.
I would certainly concur with that. And speaking of great stories, one that happened this week was Dan Johnson joining the Rays as a knuckleball pitcher. I mean, does it get any better than that?
It's so funny. And Rick Vaughn, when he delivered the news to us the other day, the long time and tremendous VP of PR for the Rays, he kind of said, "What if I told you guys that Dan Johnson was coming back?" And, you know, immediately, you know, I was like, "Wow, what a story." He goes, "And what if I told you guys he was coming back as a knuckleball pitcher?" It was like, "What?" And then to talk to Dan Johnson about it, and you know, he you know, Dan, and you know, he gets very excited. And I finally said, "Isn't this just the craziest thing?" And he looked at me and he said, "Would we want it any other way?" And it's just so Dan Johnson.
And we're going to hear from him a little bit later on in the podcast. We're hearing from Mark Topkin now, and each week we go over the roster. And you did make a slight change this week in terms of your expectation for opening day.
Yeah, and I was, you know, it's still really early. And you know, doing this exercise, I think I mentioned to you last week, you know, these first couple weeks, you tend to just kind of go with the chalk, the obvious picks, unless there's an injury that affects things. But in this case, I thought Kevin Cash made a very interesting comment last week about Matt Andrees, and he's praised him throughout the camp. And even though they're going to stretch him out as a starter, you know, Kevin Cash said that Matt Andrees was definitely competing to be on that pitching staff, which to me meant in the bullpen, they're looking for one or two guys to be these kind of swing guys who can work, you know, four outs, five outs, six outs, work an inning in two-thirds, bridge some gaps there. And Matt Andrees was a guy who did that last year. You know, he didn't plan on it. He was a starter through the minor leagues, but he kind of filled in for some relief roles for the Rays last year. And, you know, just maybe shortening him up maybe makes more sense than trying to lengthen a guy like Steve Geltz or Danny Farquhar, who are used to being, you know, a couple out or one inning max type of guys.
And you're going to be following that, as I will, all the way through. One thing we didn't mention in terms of this past week, a guy who has expectations for the Rays, principal owner Stuart Sternberg.
Yes, boy, that seems like so long ago that he was here. It's been a busy week. But, yes, Steve Sternberg, I thought an interesting and, you know, in a way, a very realistic comment. Is he, you know, as any owner would say, you know, he thought they had a great offseason. He thought they made their team better. But he did, you know, acknowledge, you know, the obvious that there's some other teams in American League East that have gotten better and are really good as well. I think he's confident they're going to be in the race. They always talk, ownership does, about playing meaningful games in September. And I think he's confident they will do that. But, you know, throwing a little caution out there, I believe he described the Blue Jays lineup as a beast, and that's a pretty good way to put it.
That's Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times. Now, we mentioned Dan Johnson and his decision to become a pitcher. I chatted with Dan on his first full day of workouts in Port Charlotte and asked him what it meant to be back.
Well, it means everything to be back. I mean, this is kind of where all the fun started, really. You know, I had some good times early in my career, but this is what I seem to remember the most, are the highlights from the years that I had with the Rays. Initially, it came down to this was something that was offered up to me, and it was an opportunity that I didn't really see coming, and ultimately, this is what I wanted to, the path that I wanted to choose. So, you know, I kind of held out and waited, and then, you know, when the opportunity arose again with the Rays, then I jumped on it.
A lot of hitters say they want to pitch, just like a lot of pitchers say they want to hit. How long have you been toying with the knuckleball, and when did this really become serious to you?
I've been toying with it since I was a kid. My dad used to call it the dancing dazzler, and he'd throw it, and, you know, like nobody would hit it or whatever when we were kids. And so I've always thrown it. And, I mean, I've used it in the little leagues and so on and so forth, you know, all the way up type thing. Didn't really pitch much. And then it's just something that I've played with since I can remember in Pro Bowl.
I remember you as a hitter. You hated facing knuckleballers. So is there something odd about you now wanting to be a knuckleballer?
You know what? I see how I remember how I was up there. So the funny thing is like, you know, I feel like I can give that same feeling to the other hitters. So it's really funny that you brought that up, because it was actually brought to my attention yesterday of how good I was at hitting knuckleballers, which is not very good.
How much of this also is having a guy who's thrown a knuckleball in camp, like Charlie Hager,
who I'm sure you faced before when you were with the White Sox, when he was with the White Sox, rather.
That's where my knuckleball problem started, if you don't remember. when Charlie was manager, actually, the last game, I don't know if you remember, but I didn't miss him any games at all. But we played the last game, and he was throwing, and I remember Charlie giving me the bench, and he was like, "You're welcome." And I was like giving him a hug before the season was over.
How much do you think it'll be helpful, though, to have him help you and knowing how to throw it, knowing how to make that transition?
Well, essentially, everything he tells me is the gospel for me right now. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm starting at square one. Like, I'm going out there, and what do you want me to do? And knowing that he's done it and he's had success with it, being in with Toronto and being able to talk with Dickie quite a bit about it and all the opportunities that I've had to, kind of pick their brains, and then now having actually a guy that's thrown actually be a part of my coaching staff, I think the things are looking up for it.
How much time are you willing to give yourself with this? Because, look, you're 36, but knuckleballers can pitch their 50.
That's the thing, and another thing is you know what? I've got 16 seasons in. You know, I'm okay. Like, if it doesn't work, I got a family at home. This is going to be something that I'm going to give everything I got to, and then it's like kind of self-assess, coach assess, and see where it's at. If it's getting better, of course I'm going to keep going with it. It's something that I've always had, and the joke was always made, you need to get on the mound. So it's time to go. Let's see what happens. I mean, I don't know if I could live with myself if I didn't give it at least a shot.
You mentioned your family. So what did Holly say when you said, honey, I'm going back to camp and I'm going to be a knuckleball pitcher?
See, well, as odd as my career has been, the stories that I have during my career, it just fits right in with her. She's like, oh, well, okay, here we go. And to not know, to make the decision and sign and fly out the same day, like at 9 o'clock in the morning, and then be, at the airport at 10:30, and find, that's kind of how my day went, and that's just standard for her. Her life there, she's just like, oh, here we go, we gotta make adjustments.
That's Dan Johnson, and we certainly wish him well as he transitions to the mound. Now, speaking of transitions, Kurt Casale last year made the transition from playing a platoon role to almost every day with the Rays. He suffered a hamstring injury that cost him the last month of 2016, and I asked Kurt Casale when in the offseason he felt 100%.
I felt pretty normal about 2 weeks after the season. I really didn't do a heck of a lot. I laid on the couch per instructions from, Ron and Hark and Mark. But I felt pretty good the whole offseason, to be honest with you. I didn't think it hindered my preparation in any way, shape, or form. I actually thought I had a really good offseason of working out and getting stronger, and the people I was with, we got some great cage time. So I feel good coming into this season. Obviously, I need to get back the timing. That'd be goal number one for getting back into spring training shape and game shape. But overall, didn't take me very long. I'm hard headed. I probably should have just taken 4 weeks off of doing nothing during the season. But I see my guys out there. I want to get back as fast as I can. I was trying to do whatever I could to get back on the team last year.
You mentioned getting stronger. Was that a point of emphasis for you coming into this season? Were there things after you went through last year that you said, I want to do this, this, and this better, and this will help me get there?
Yeah, just based on my past seasons, I wanted to be healthy for a full season and be able to catch a bunch of games. I think that's the goal. I want to be durable and help these guys out for whatever I can. And not that I don't think endurance was a problem last year, but maybe I wasn't ready to catch as much as I was last year. So maybe that's why my hamstring gave out when it did. But I really tried to focus on those type of exercises during the off season to try and enable me to have a long and successful season this year.
I was curious about that. You mentioned you went basically from not playing or playing on a very semi-regular basis to playing almost every day.
Yeah.
Was it the physical or the mental that was tougher with that change? Obviously, you got great results.
I think it might have been a combination of both. I don't think I necessarily, thought it was a huge adjustment, just because I'm used to playing every day. Just in that particular instance, I guess I had been cold. But then again, I should be able to handle that. I mean, that's the way that this game goes. I mean, you can get hot, you're going to play a lot, and you can get cold, and you're not going to play. So I understand it, and I'm not at all complaining about the opportunity to play every day, because that was, you know, the time of my life, and I want to continue to do that at the same time. So this offseason was a lot of emphasis on endurance and making sure that I could handle the strengths and challenges of being an everyday catcher.
Did you put on weight, or are you pretty much the same, just redistributed?
This is pretty much a normal weight gain for me this offseason. I probably put on 10 to 15 pounds, just knowing that I'm going to lose it. I try to come in heavier, or as heavy as possible. Obviously, a good, you know, good weight, not bad weight, but just knowing that spring training is probably going to be down 5 pounds by the end of this thing, and then by the season ends, I might be 15 to 20 pounds lighter. Just something that, you know, it's my fifth season. I kind of know what my body responds to and doesn't respond to. So, lot of weightlifting. A lot of stretching this off season, and you know, a lot of good eating too.
And the last stretch you had last year before the injury, you put together 100 unbelievable at bats in terms of the power numbers. How much did that help, or does that help you going forward in terms of confidence and your thoughts on, you know, moving forward this year?
Yeah, I definitely feel a sense of belonging this season, for the most part. Just the way that you know, the guys have greeted me, and I'm able to, you know, converse with them on a deeper level, a more comfortable level, more trustworthy level. I think that me showing them that I can play and that, you know, I maybe deserve to play just makes the spring training a little easier for me. And, you know, some of the guys that we brought in, it's been awesome. But in terms of last season, I guess you could say it was an unconscious thing last year. I definitely felt good at the plate for that stretch of time, and I'm just hoping that I can repeat some of it, because I don't know if the home run to at bat ratio can stick. Just because I'm assuming that I'm going to get adjustments, but from pitchers, and I've already seen it. My first two at bats, I got 4 sliders. The first two at bats. So I feel like I'm going to have to get used to that and battle my way back to where I want to be.
That's Kurt Casale, likely assuming health, to be on the Rays opening day roster. Now, don't forget, Dave and Andy will host Countdown to Opening Day this Thursday, where slated to be among our guests will be Jay Cotorizzi. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.